This is the Odro interview series with Doogie Loane.
Good afternoon, guys. It is episode number 5 now of the Odro interview series. It's been a little while since I've managed to get one of these videos out to you. A mixture of things. It's been really, really busy here and at the Odro office. And my guest this week, Bruce Walker, has also been very busy himself. But what I'll do is I'll pass you on to Bruce to introduce himself and tell you a bit about his business.
Hi there, thanks for having me. So my name's Bruce Walker. I'm the founder of an organisation called We Are The Future. And essentially we are a global entrepreneurship organisation and we host these big international summits and programmes for entrepreneurs all over the world. And the mission is super simple. We're just looking to inspire and connect entrepreneurs.
Perfect. Excellent. And it's a business that I was fairly aware of, if that makes sense, through the likes of LinkedIn and being connected with you on LinkedIn, Bruce. But obviously, you were in our offices a couple of weeks back doing one of our breakfast talks. And I really got the chance to get a much bigger understanding of what it is you guys do, because it's not just a case of, you know, having a hall or, you know, a small hall and then you just invite people along. It's much more organized than that. And I think the theory behind it is really great as well, because it's about not just having people obviously do talks, etc., but it's about connecting people with individuals that can then help them put what they've heard into practice at the end. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I hope they're fairly organized.
Yes.
last year we had nearly 1,000 entrepreneurs attended the event, and we had a bunch of speakers that flew in from all corners of the world, and that was really cool. So yeah, it's about... But what I found when I was attending events before is that you either got fairly long talks, and they were fine sometimes. Sometimes they were inspirational. Other times they went on for a wee while. But the thing that happened to me most of the time is that I would leave. I would go, right, feeling inspired. Let's take on the world. But then I went and looked at the inbox, and the emails were packed out. I had loads of other things to do, and the inspiration dipped really quickly.
Yeah.
So we said, well, what's the missing component here? And it's about taking that actionable step at the event. So you can have your world-leading entrepreneurs speak, but also have all the organizations that are there to support them, support business, all represented at the event as well. So you can go from feeling, yep, I'm going to be the next Mark Zuckerberg or the next whoever, and you can go through the next room, and all the components that make up an ecosystem are there to help you.
Fantastic. Excellent. And it's not a typical business. You know, I hope I don't offend you when I say this, but I couldn't imagine, you know, being in high school and thinking I'm going to start a business that focuses on bringing entrepreneurs together or anything like that. So how did it all kind of come about for you? What's the story behind it?
So I started when I was 17 in high school. It wasn't any ambition to actually really start a business. We took part in Young Enterprise, and so we were compelled to come up with a business idea. And initially we came up with something totally different. We were gonna make friendship bracelets because we thought that was the best idea. But that quickly didn't work. And so we had to do something different. And so we thought, well, why don't we put on an event and bring local entrepreneurs to that event, and they'll share their stories and we'll become inspired.
Brilliant.
And so we did that, and it was pretty successful. 135 people bought tickets. We had some really cool entrepreneurs take part, got endorsements from some of the biggest business figures in the UK.
Brilliant.
But again, I hadn't thought that this was going to be a business for me. I thought this is just a good thing to put on the CV, and it will connect with some interesting people.
Yep.
I didn't really know what I wanted my career to be, but what I did think is I was going to go to university, study, and then 4 years after my degree, I'd find something to do.
Yeah.
So I had no grand plan. But what happened is after that first event in high school, I thought it worked really well. What if I ran another one? But this time I did it in Edinburgh with a bigger audience. That would definitely connect me with the people I need to meet who might offer me a job in the future.
Excellent. So looking at it from a kind of selfish point of view to a certain extent as well.
Totally. It was totally about, for me at the time, it was about how do I maximise my opportunities while also, I think, carving out a bit of a niche, I suppose, because people weren't doing the events in this way. So I knew that events needed to change. And I knew there was an opportunity, but I guess I didn't see the size of the opportunity. I was looking at it more from a personal perspective.
I'm sorry.
So we ran that first event, or the second event, in Edinburgh. We had 500 people attend, and people came in from all corners of the UK, which was really exciting. And then there was a speaker there who ultimately asked if I would be interested in doing this in California, which was totally nuts for me to even consider doing that. But that's really when it started to formulate into maybe being something beyond just a CV builder.
Yeah, of course. And when you were saying, you know, like you said, you went from this kind of initial small event, then you'd done Edinburgh, and 500 attendees to any event, regardless of whether it's a first event or an event that's been running for years, is fantastic. I was in an event Thursday night, and there was around 70 or 80 business owners there, and I thought, this is great, what a turnout. But to manage to get 500 attendees to your second event, I can imagine was quite a good feeling.
It was a great feeling. It wasn't something we had ever anticipated, though. For anyone that organises events, they'll know that people sign up at the last minute, which is the bane of my life. Because we can't properly forecast, and we go, right, we know we'll probably get them, but then you get like 3 weeks before the event, you're like, we've not quite hit the numbers we want to. And even though we've been doing this for 4 or 5 years now, every time it gets to that stage, we're still starting to panic. Going, shit, are people actually going to buy tickets?
Exactly. And then you've got the people that fall out as well, in terms of the drop away that come in, more so with free events. Obviously, people just register on Eventbrite and things like that, and other ticketing platforms for events.
Which is an interesting thing for us, because when we started, most of the events were free. And people kept saying to us, why are we charging money? And then we got quite a lot of pressure off people saying, you know, if this is really an event for entrepreneurs, for the community, then it should be a free event.
Yeah.
I always challenge that logic, because one, the drop-off rates are much, much higher, but also people pay for value. So if you can't find 10 quid, which is less than the cost of your lunch, and you get the lunch with the event anyway, then you're probably not ready for the event. You're probably not ready for the content. And so we've proven by a long shot that paying for events actually increases the number of attendees overall, and the contribution from the audience is always much higher, because they want to get as much out of the event as they can.
Absolutely. I think like you said there, is that, you know, price is only an issue in the absence of value, and certainly from what I've heard from you and seen on your website as well, around the types of individuals that you can manage to bring together in one room, there's certainly a lot of value in the events and summits that you've been running. But just taking it back a second, you'd said so at the second event, you know, somebody had approached you and said, you know, why don't you run something like this in California? Mm-hmm. Was that really the kind of eureka moment for you then? Is that when it started, or were you still not really realizing at that point how big it could really be?
So when Stacey, who was a speaker, said, oh, you should think about doing this in California, I think it was one of those just friendly throwaway comments that people say. So at that point, I knew very little about Silicon Valley, I have to say. So I must have been about 18 when we ran that event. So I didn't know a huge amount about Silicon Valley. And so when Stacey said, you should come and do this in California, I was kind of like, cool, but what's the chances? You know, we're never going to be able to do that. And it wasn't until I got some really good advice, which was, you're 18, what have you got to lose? For the price of a plane ticket, you know, it's worth exploring.
Absolutely.
And so I thought, okay, I'll take that on, and I'll email as many people as I can in Silicon Valley and just see if they'll meet with me. And it's really funny now thinking about doing that, because it was a ridiculous thing to do. Going, an 18-year-old, what possibly would global CEOs be interested in an 18-year-old for? But I sent out all these different messages, and I guess the more infamous story now is that the message I sent to Steve Jobs, it's Tim Cook at Apple, and I got a response, and the response said that Tim couldn't meet with me because he was busy running Apple. If there's an excuse, then that's definitely a good one. But they did say that there might be other people I could meet with, and they eventually passed me down. I got a meeting, and so my first meeting in Silicon Valley was with Apple.
Excellent.
Which was just crazy, and that boosted my confidence sky high. So I went and repeated that model, and I asked people at Google and eBay and Airbnb. I got all these new things. So I thought, well, that justifies a plane ticket. And so booked a ticket, went over, met with these people. I was absolutely blown away. And I basically asked everyone, would they either speak at an event that I would organize, or would they sponsor the event?
Yep.
And every single one of them did one of those things.
Fantastic.
And the ones that couldn't do those things, I actually asked them if they would then meet a group of entrepreneurs, like they've met with me. And they said yes to that, which was the start of the program where we started bringing entrepreneurs from the UK over to Silicon Valley. And then we ran that first event in California about 3 months after my trip. And yeah, and that was the start of it. That's when I started to think, right, this could be real.
Yep.
It was immediately on the back of doing it in San Francisco. We got approached and said, will we do this in LA? And we said yes. And then we got asked, will we do this in Abu Dhabi? And we said yes.
Fantastic.
And now we've hosted events in LA, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Abu Dhabi, Edinburgh, London, Glasgow, Hong Kong, and Shenzhen.
Wow. So you've probably spent more of your time outside of Glasgow and Edinburgh now than you do in it.
Yeah, well, so that was the lesson. Early on, I thought, I want to do more events outside of Scotland as I can, and to just keep it exciting. And that's what we've done.
But I think that, you know, when you're saying like doing more events outside of Scotland, that I think that really are one of the things that I like about it, and it's so different, is that you take people, you take entrepreneurs effectively from Scotland, and you get them, you give them the opportunity to listen to these individuals that they would otherwise not normally get the chance to be in a room with. And I think that's quite unique, certainly from anything else out there that I'm aware of anyway. The other thing as well that I wanted to say to you was that we kind of had an initial chat a couple of weeks back before the talks, and you spoke about how you never really thought about the events as it wasn't business idea first, and then you put it into play. It just kind of seemed to naturally evolve. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it must have been that eureka moment for you when you finally realised that you could commercialise what you were doing in some form. And how have you then kind of went on to build the business in the back of that then? Have you, is it just yourself, or you've got other people involved, or how does it work?
So it's a good time for that question, because we're going through a whole restructure now in order to grow the business. The conversation you're alluding to is the one where I was saying that we had this passion of doing something, and then once we realised there was an interest, we had to build a business around that kind of idea.
Absolutely.
We are still a social business, and everyone calls them social enterprises, but I am insisting on calling them a social business, because we are socially conscious, socially motivated, and the business is what powers it. And so in order to do all those socially powerful things, we need a business that functions, that generates income, that generates profit, that we can then put back into the growing of the social mission. And they don't exist without each other. They cannot exist without each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've looked at all areas of how do we commercialize what we do. We realized that there's this great opportunity for businesses and corporates to engage with each other. So we try to facilitate as much link there as we can. So the entrepreneurs have really innovative, high growth potential, and the corporates are looking to see how they can support them in as any way they can. So we do a lot of matching there.
Brilliant.
And then what we're doing at the moment is we're actually looking about how do we move beyond our big events. So historically, we have organized really big conferences, and that's been where the majority of our revenue comes from. And we want to continue to do that because it plays a really important purpose in the ecosystem. But we also want to have a much greater impact on individual entrepreneurs. So at the moment, it's kind of like a mass blanket effect. So 6,000 entrepreneurs over the last 4 years.
Wow.
But there's only maybe about 30 of them who we've worked closely, intimately with. And that's been on our programs to Silicon Valley or our programs to China. So the next evolution is how do we have more impact on individuals?
Yeah.
And so we're working really closely with an organization called Power of Youth.
Okay.
And Adam and I, so Adam's the founder of Power of Youth, we have co-founded an organization called Future X,
yep,
which is about that next stage of how do we have a greater impact. And we're essentially using our resources through We Are the Future and Power of Youth on this mission that about purpose-led business, that any business can be a force for good and that any business can help impact the communities and the world that they live in. So that's the next phase.
Brilliant. Excellent. And that brings me perfectly into my next question, which would be, obviously, like we'd spoke about before, you kind of... When you started up, you kind of done it in the reversed fashion, if that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. the idea, etc., kind of came first, and then it was commercialized at the other end. But what kind of hints and tips do you have for entrepreneurs out there? So, you've helped, you know, or you've dealt with over 6,000 entrepreneurs over the 4-year period, and I'm sure you've probably seen your fair share of ups and downs and things that have went well and things that haven't went so well. Mm-hmm. So, what kind of hints and tips do you have for any individual that's looking to kind of start up then and go out there?
So there's some kind of holistic advice, which is around make sure that you genuinely have a purpose to what you're doing.
Yep.
And that's about having belief in the business and belief in yourself. That's the biggest thing that holds back. I mean, we're pretty bad for it in Scotland, but it is true of the rest of the UK and often the rest of the world, is that we lack belief in ourselves. And that's the bit that often holds us back, because we believe... we put self-imposed barriers that stop us doing things. If you can learn to push beyond that, even if it's outside your comfort zone, that's really helpful.
Yep.
Get yourself a mentor or a role model that you can ask for advice, because being an entrepreneur is super lonely, and you need that support. You need someone else for a sounding board.
Okay.
So those are the kind of more holistic stuff. From a practical point of view, make sure there's demand for what you want. So many people I see invest a lot of time, a lot of money into building a business that ultimately the market doesn't want. And you need a lot of marketing power to prove to the market that they want something that they didn't initially want. So,
yes.
And people often reference companies like Apple. Well, say, oh, but Apple just innovates and then people want it. Apple has a very, very big marketing spend that convinces you to buy their products.
Absolutely.
So make sure there's some kind of demand. The big thing for me, and that I've put my hands up and say I've fallen foul to this in the past, is not managing the bloody cash properly. And so it's easy to run out of money, basically. And making sure that you bridge the gaps for the times where the revenue is dipping, but you know there's income coming in maybe in 3 months' time and it's guaranteed. But you can die in the time between now and 3 months' time. The business might die. It can't fill that hole. So, yeah, the accountants say all the time, cash is king, and it's just
true. It's true. Absolutely. No, I think that what you covered off there is really, really important. And, you know, even just going back to the holistic stuff that you said, Bruce, is that, you know, I'm not an entrepreneur, right? So I don't run my own business or anything like that. But having, you know, throughout my time in recruitment, I dealt with a lot of startups and a lot of individuals that were kind of starting out. And even in this role, it's great that I get the chance to speak to people like yourself and other individuals. And I think that one of the things that always comes through is that being an entrepreneur isn't always... you know, it's not all glamour, you know, it's not all kind of, rock and roll and all the rest of it. And there are really, really bad points sometimes and that it can, like you said, it can be lonely. But there are other points as well where a lot of individuals have said to me is that they get to a really low point where it's like, you know, I don't know if I can do it anymore. You know, I don't know if I can continue on doing it. And actually, I think what you said there about having that kind of belief system and having that kind of the why, if that makes sense,
totally.
Is what kind of carry you through that.
All of it, why. For anyone that's watching this that hasn't read the Simon Sinek book, Start With Why, do it, because it's absolutely brilliant. The stuff around glamour is really funny, because most of the time it's not glamorous, you know. You get occasionally asked to do stuff and you find yourself in situations that you otherwise would never be in. And that's exciting, and sometimes it is a bit glamorous. But the caveat is that 95% of the time, that's not the way it is. I think that even now, but particularly in the early days, if someone was to follow me on social media, they would have a massively distorted view of my life. So they would see me flying in around different places in the world for a period. We had a wonderful partnership with Virgin Atlantic, which meant that they gave us their gold cards and we flew business class. You know, they gave us free upgrades and we got access to their lounges, and it was pretty glamorous for that for that period. And it looked as though we were all, you know, there was pictures of me speaking at events, and it all looked really exciting. But those are snapshots of a much, much, much bigger picture, which is lots of hard work, lots of really long hours, lots of sometimes really tough, miserable days. And that's kind of what allows you to do the other stuff. But that's definitely not realistic to the lifestyle. And one of the big things that's taken, and this is more about, I would say, a life lesson than just in business, which is, try not to compare yourself to other people.
Right, okay.
Because you compare yourself a lot of us now in this digital age, we compare ourselves via social media. So in the same way that people might look at my Instagram feed and go, oh, well, that's really cool, he's doing all these things. As I look at other people and go, oh, God, they've just got a new car. Why can't I afford that new car yet? Like, I'm working really, really hard. Why can't I afford it yet? But you have no idea, actually, all the backlog to that. If people look at my social media, I'm not going to post the pictures of the days when I'm feeling really shit. I'm not going to post the pictures of me sitting on my sofa with looking miserable.
Yeah,
I'm only going to post the pictures of the nice beaches and the interesting meetings I've been at.
Because that's what engages people.
Exactly, and that's what gets you the engagement, the likes, all the stuff that you want to generate your social media following. But it's not necessarily a true example of someone's life.
Perfect. No, I think that that's really, really important. And I think that, like you said, a lot of people do it nowadays. And I never really thought of a situation where an entrepreneur would compare themselves to another entrepreneur, and that somebody, like you said, you know, who on the face of it looks very, very glamorous, may actually also have the exact same feeling that another individual would have when they look at your profile. So it's interesting to see that. My final question for you then, Bruce, is, like I said to you at the start, the entire purpose of the Audra interview series has been absolutely lost along the way, and it's actually just now been more about bringing on people who have got a really cool story and having a chat with them. But I still like to ask this question anyway, which is, what technology do you feel has had the biggest impact on allowing you to start your business? Because obviously, you know, you started when you were kind of 17, 18, and you know, you got the opportunity to go over to obviously Silicon Valley, and you've run all these events worldwide. What's been the kind of most important technology available to you throughout that time?
I think, so for us, the ability to connect internationally is really, really important. So, you know, in the space of a day, we could literally have calls in all corners of the planet. So we could be speaking in West Coast US, we could be speaking in New Zealand, we could speak in India, all in the same day. And so different pieces of technology, I suppose, the ability to do something like this and see each other and have those conversations, that's really powerful, because you can build up relationships with people before you've even met them.
Yes.
So, you know, I was saying when we first went to Silicon Valley, I did a lot of this before I went. So, you know, they didn't just meet me because I sent them an email. Yeah. They engaged with me because I sent them an email, and then they wanted to suss me out. And then, you know, nothing beats physically meeting people, because I think a lot of people didn't think I was real. You know, there's no way this young Scot's going to come over and actually meet with us. I mean, being able to interface like this, I think, is really cool. Old-fashioned email for me has been an absolute winner. I think that's probably.
It's funny, because when I first started this, when I had that question, was I always thought there was going to be some groundbreaking technology that, you know, that or a program that I wasn't using that was going to be, but genuinely the most common one, and I think everybody said it, has been, or like you alluded to, there's been a smartphone. It's just been able to connect and through different means, whether that be email or phone or social media, and have it all at your fingertips at any one time. Just when you were talking there about email, and I'm aware that this is running over a wee bit, but just one final thing I want to ask you was that there's a big conversation going on just now and kind of every circle that focuses on sales or bringing on new business around the argument between email and phone. My personal opinion is that it's a balance of both. You know, you're never always going to have massive success rates just by emailing people, and similarly, if you're just cold calling and bashing people all the time, then you're just going to annoy them. So what's your opinion? Because I know that you've obviously had a massive, you know, you were successful in getting to talk to people that a lot of others don't get the chance to do. So what's your opinion on it?
I think nothing beats a phone call because it's human. You're actually getting to speak to someone, and it's, yeah, people also, people are, tend to, if you're trying to sell, it's easier to sell on the phone because it's harder to say no. the key is, and this seems obvious, but no one likes to be sold to, but we all love to buy. So the problem there is in the method and the technique. So I get lots of emails, I'm sure loads of other people do, with really quite what looks like quite spammy sales emails.
Yeah.
And they say something like, it starts off telling me about their service and I don't respond. And then I get another email saying, oh, maybe I'm not speaking to the right person, and then blah, blah, blah. And they come back and they say, it's these three styles. And someone's told them that that's the way to do it. And I'm sure they get responses. But that's just, for me, that's, you're not going to sell me that way because it looks like you're trying to sell me something.
Exactly.
So I think if you're emailing someone and you're looking for a sale, saying something along, this is what I've done, something along the lines of, I see what you're doing. It looks really, really interesting. Have you got 10 minutes? I can get some advice from you.
Perfect.
And the 10 minutes is, I either want to meet with them or a phone call. And I've been fairly ambiguous, but I've hopefully piqued a little bit of their interest. But mostly it's about, can I get advice? And then you can ask them whatever you want once you're on the phone to them. But it's about not trying to sell to them right away.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone's desperate to meet their sales quota, and I appreciate that. But you'll end up getting a lot better if you're actually building up relationships with people.
Absolutely. No, thanks very much, Bruce. I completely agree with what you've said there. And it's, I think that, you know, email is a form of creating that face-to-face or telephone-based conversation is always going to be the best way. I'm yet to meet anybody that's bought anything over email. So I'm sure we'll, who knows, we might end up that way in the future, but we'll see. But listen, Bruce, it's been absolutely great to have you on. I really appreciate it. And I know that you're an absolutely busy guy. So I really appreciate you taking the time out your day-to-day stuff to do this as well. And yes, guys, and thanks very much for watching as well. What I'll do is I will link this through to Bruce's LinkedIn profile. So, you know, by all means, I'm sure hopefully this is okay with you, but the guys and girls that will be able to get in touch with you to learn a bit more about what you're doing as a business. And certainly if you're an entrepreneur that's looking to get involved with what we are the future are doing as well, then I'm sure Bruce would be more than happy to hear from you.
If you'd like to find out more about Odro or would like to be involved in the interview series, get in touch with Doogie by emailing doogie@odro.co.uk.